You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is the 8th day of March 2013. It's USDA Report Day. On the phone line with us to go through those numbers and what happened at the CME Group after they were released at 11 o'clock Central Time, Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. First off, Mike, thank you so much for making the trip with me to Jacksonville last night.
That was just a wonderful meeting, Todd. I tell you, that all the meetings are wonderful, but it seems like they keep getting better and better. And I think, you know, one of the upsides to the uncertainty that we face in a wide range of issues this year is that more people are coming out and more people are interconnected and listening, and you're gaining a lot more traction with trying to educate. It's just a great panel and a great group. Thank you for setting that up, and our thanks to our colleagues over in Jacksonville and Farm Credit for doing that for us.
Farm Credit Service put that one together for us at Hamilton's. And if you've not been to Hamilton's in Jacksonville for any reason, look for a reason to go. It's a really nice place to have a meeting. I felt really underdressed when we got there with the chandeliers hanging from the ceiling, I have to admit, tell you. Hey, take me through the numbers, if you could, from 11 o'clock this morning as they were released by USDA. What did you find of interest?
I think the biggest interest, obviously, is the soybeans and versus the corn and the way the trade traded those two numbers. And in essence, what we got was a more friendly corn ending stocks number because of the feed and residual being pumped up so much. I think that was contrasted with the fact that the USDA just didn't do anything and move any fingers or lift a finger on the U.S. bean numbers at all. And I think, if anything, Todd, I would guess the biggest likelihood in the last 7 or 8 months, in my opinion, that this report could be completely faded by the trade. If we come back next week and the spread stays strong, cash basis stays strong, and we start talking weather, I wonder if we haven't put this report all the way behind us because of the inconclusive issues with the beans and the credibility issue with the beans. So having said that, the market essentially just went into an unwinding and reversal of the bean-corn spread, buying the corn back, selling the beans out, and they pretty much did that all the way through from noon Eastern to 3 o'clock Eastern's close.
And I found it of interest that while it didn't change, and we can talk about how it changed, you mentioned it in the corn, the feed and residual number for the corn, ending stocks didn't change for either corn or soybeans. Almost no numbers for the soybeans changed, with the exception of the average cash price for this season. It went from 1355 to 1505 on the range to 1380 on the top side, or on the bottom side, which is a higher high, or a lower high.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, a higher low.
Lower average price.
higher low, but they lowered the top side from 1505 to 1480.
Yeah, and I think they're doing this because I think they are seeing where China has been canceling, and there's kind of a sensitivity of demand where the elasticity or a ceiling in demand comes into play when you get to a certain price level. But here again, I think that you have to look at the crush numbers and the export numbers together, and it just doesn't make any sense to me fundamentally and from a statistical standpoint without seeing big negative. I mean, if we would have had a weekly export sale of negative 300,000 metric tons instead of 1.4 million metric tons on Thursday, then I could have said, you know, today's report's probably on the right end of the spectrum. But
right,
this just doesn't wash. And I, you know, that's everybody I talk to in Chicago and every analyst that I corresponded with after the report came out. We all were saying the exact same thing. So I think we go back to a typical March time period now, where you have a historically tight 1996 type corn market and a historically tight 1997 type and 2004 type bean market, where the cash and spreads continue to direct the cash market, the funds continue to direct the futures, because there's no real guidance by the government at this stage. And so now you add into the extra uncertainty of weather, and it's like we talked about last night, strap yourself in, because it doesn't have to be this way, I guess is what I'm getting at, is the market is disciplined enough to ration demand when it
right
sees the need, and has the reaction that, you know, that's appropriate if it gets the right data.
Yeah, to clarify my data, as we were trying to move into that, the new average cash price is inside the range of the old average cash price, is what I was trying to get at. So that's one thing. And then what you mentioned here with the soybeans, I suppose, is that the trade simply doesn't believe that the export number is correct then, and they want a higher export number for soybeans. Is that where you're at?
What typically happens is that the market keeps going up until it starts seeing starts to see those negative numbers come in on the exports, or it starts to see the NOPA crush numbers drop dramatically. But when I check the crush rates and the crushing margins for May through September, they're still running in the high 30s to low 50s. They're still very profitable for domestic crushers. And so I think what the market's reaction should be is that, okay, if you're going to say this, USDA, then we're going to have to take the market up until we make you right, and that's where we go into that rationing function. I think the other thing that really, you know, we talked about this a lot last night, and this is where I really see the corn as the most undervalued, partly because of the disappointing price action of wheat, but just partly because I don't think the managed money really looks at the supply side when they trade that much. They look at the demand side. But when I went through the statistics and I got on the FarmDoc website and looked at all the past 25 years of world-ending stocks and coarse grains versus total consumption, we went down to 13% in global coarse grain stocks-to-use ratio. That beats 2006, which was 14%. It beats 1996, which was 15%. Our consumption being up at around 1.14 billion metric tons, that's a massive number compared to what we've been used to in history. So that 145 ending stocks number that we got for global coarse grains, Todd, that is historically tight when you factor in that usage. And that's where the imports do make sense from what USDA is saying. But then you have to ask yourself, if we're going to import corn, or if we're going to import corn from Brazil, why wouldn't we feed more wheat? Why did they leave the wheat feeding number completely alone? So, you know, there's a domino effect here in what they're trying to do, and they just didn't connect the dots, in my opinion.
Yeah, so I sent out a quick note on it to you this morning because I went back and grabbed the WASDE figures from March and May and July, August, and September, October last year, and was looking at how the corn and the wheat numbers changed, trying to figure out just exactly what USDA was thinking through that process, because there was a point at which we went from a really big corn crop coming at us and a carryout that was pretty big to what we're at now.
Yeah.
And at that same time, we shrank. We looked like we used maybe about 50 million bushels of wheat for substitution into the feed supply, but I'm not quite certain about that. But
no, I think your bottom line point in that email was, does this mean that we essentially moved 150 million bushels on new crop of corn earlier into the system? And I think that's exactly right, and we've been doing that and trying to keep those numbers straight for going on, you know, 16 months
right
now.
Right. And so the other point was then we took our ending stocks, which was about 800 million at this time of year last year, and pushed it all the way to just above a billion bushels by the time we got to August.
Yes.
And part of that was moving new crop into the system, but we're starting 200 million bushels lower now than we did last year.
And the major point you take away from that, if you're a producer, is simply this. If you're looking at an average cash price of $450, $480, whatever you want to call the USDA average cash price, and 163 bushels to the acre, if you're talking about that type of tightness in old crop, and you feel as though that yield number for corn for new crop is just too high given where we're at right now in terms of weather conditions, I think you really want to reflect hard on any unlimited risk positions in on the short side when it comes to futures, whether it's short futures, sold calls, things like that. I think those are getting more and more risky, and you're taking a greater and greater chance. Maybe you're willing to take that chance because you'd love to sell corn at a higher price, and you'd love those calls or those short futures to run over you because you're so disappointed with the market. That's fine, fair enough, but be ready for that to happen because of how historically tight we are on this old crop. And I would stress, I don't see much weather premium at all in the corn for the new crop. And when today's numbers would suggest, that's even doubly so.
Any advice for producers as they consider their crop insurance decisions?
Well, I continue to promote the idea that unless you're under all irrigation on your beans, I would stress that with the scenario we're developing here in the beans and the idea that if we're really at 100 million bushel carryover and we come to find that out in about 60 days, you're probably going to want 15 or 20 bushels to the acre unsold in the cash market so that you're protecting yourself from a sharp rally, $2, $3, maybe even $4 rally in November, where November essentially goes up to March and May futures. I see the best way to do that as increasing your level of insurance and using that last 15 to 20 bushels as your insurance as to cover your downside, that if you would drop $3 or $4, you're taken care of on your RP. If you go up $3 or $4, you didn't sell that cash bushel. So for $5 or $6 an acre, I think that's pretty good. That's about a 10-cent option right there if you're talking about 55 bushel yields.
For end users, any opportunities to book near-term corn or bean meal?
Yeah, I think you're there. I think that if you want to get as bearish as possible between now and July, I would say between this 540 level that we tested and $5 in December, you would want to be, I think, 12 months covered for cattle and hog guys in the corn market. Even if we have a 1.6 or 1.7, that's what FAPRI came out with today, was a 1.6-something
Wow.
carryover on corn. That matches up more with my number. But even if we came out with a 2.1 billion bushel carryover, you got to wonder how much of that you're going to price in between now and July. So I think you're in the sweet spot as a livestock producer. I would also say, Todd, you may be making your 2013 lows in feeder cattle right now, because they are at the narrowest against fat cattle as going back all the way to 2010 at this point. So you might want to be, if you're looking at putting some heifers on the ground, this, in my opinion, would be the time to do it.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report.